Greetings, this is James Gillen broadcasting live from Mexico, an undisclosed location, which we're going to keep it that way. But anyway, it's great down here. I'm having some incredible connections and experiences. I'm getting some much needed dental work done as well. And so I'm fresh out of the dentist right now. Hopefully my lips work and my tongue does not tie itself into a knot. But some really good things are happening. I wanted to bring back on Randy Kramer. He's a.k.a. Captain K, and he's with the U.S. Marine Corps. He's an officer, and he's with the special unit. And we'll have him talk more about that when we bring him on. But there's a lot of controversy out there and a lot of information flying around about Mars and Mars exploding and bases being destroyed and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And the Cabal base was blown up on Mars. I mean, there's all these channel messages out there as well, and what better person to get down to the nitty-gritty of this and find out what's really going on. So without any further ado, I want to bring Randy on the show. Randy, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me again, James.
Yeah, for those that haven't, you know, heard about you, or this is their first time listening, or maybe you could give us just a short recap of who you are and what you're involved in.
Sure. In the late 1953 time frame, President Dwight Eisenhower signed a secret executive order into law that signed the United States Marine Corps Special Section Special Code into law, and essentially creating a covert military intelligence branch called the United States Marine Corps Special Section, whose job was specifically mandated to be able to investigate and respond and deal with all matters extraterrestrial, non-human, multidimensional beings, etc. In the sort of mid-late 1960s, in the midst of what would be the beginning, the sort of real beginning of genetic engineering super soldier programs, where the ground-up sort of engineering was starting. Before that, there was a lot of augmentation, gene therapy, a lot of sort of what can we do with people who, you know, already got whatever, you know, God's given them. But it was, you know, definitely by the 60s where it was like, you know, why are we doing that? We can start from the ground up and we can just genetically engineer and build straight from the ground up. So over the latter half of the late 1960s, Project Moonshadow was underway, and then by 1969 time frame, I was engineered and implanted into my mother's womb and born to my family to be raised and trained as a augmented super soldier for United States Marine Corps Special Section, who then parcels their soldiers once they graduate from their programs to a larger program, a global sort of cooperative program called Project Mannequin. Project Mannequin then has the responsibility of sort of parceling out those super soldiers into sections wherever they may be needed and are requested from different units. So some may return terrestrially back to planet Earth to covert military special forces units. A whole other set of them will go off to the solar system off-world programs, which is essentially the Earth Defense Force, which is a number of military programs and military space programs who, again, sort of loosely cooperate in a global program, global initiative, you know, quasi-United Nations, like called the Earth Defense Force. In my case, I was fortunate or unfortunate, depending on how you want to look at it. Once I was parceled to the Earth Defense Force lot, then parceled to a MDF or Mars Defense Force lot that is a private contracted military defense force which defends the Mars Colony Corporation colonies on Mars. So in a super nutshell, I was made for this from the ground up, genetically engineered from the ground up to be an augmented soldier. And at 17 years old, when I was done and graduated the program, like I just mentioned, was parceled through these other programs, which got me to Mars for the MDF, where I spent 17 years plus 3 months, so many days there doing that. That's a whole other long story, which I've done plenty of interviews and talked about the war that we had there and the indigenous species in which I encountered there, one man-eater insectoid and the other reptilian. Talked quite a bit about that. And then it was a 20-year tour, and so the remainder of my tour, I was very fortunate to have been promoted, got to go to flight school, became an officer, and got to fly fighters on in an air wing out of the EDFSS Nautilus, which is one of the ships that's in Project Radiant Guardian, or it's also been called Solar Warden. These are names that change. So anytime you ever hear somebody say Solar Warden or Radiant Guardian, they're talking about the same program, just, you know, having been labeled or named something different at different points. There may be other names that have been used. Those are the two that I've heard and am familiar with. It was Radiant Guardian when I was under the program, but I've heard other people say Solar Warden, and I know that's an accurate name. It's just, you know, when they change program names, which they do all the time, it doesn't, you know, especially when people know certain names and those names leak out, then they go, oh, everybody knows that name, we have to change the name. So that's often the case. So by now, since Solar Warden is out there, Radiant Guardian is out there, it's very likely that the program is now a completely different, excuse me, functional name. So, and then I returned, essentially, in a very, I know this may sound strange to those who haven't heard the story, 15 minutes after I left in 1987, age reversed back into a 17-year-old body, memories repressed, and then woke up the next day with a horrible, horrible headache, knowing that something was horribly, horribly wrong, because I was still suffering from all the post-traumatic stress disorder, all the mental, emotional, psychological problems of having just experienced 20 years of the most horrific wartime trauma that a person could go through, and then began a 20-year healing process. So 20-year tour of duty, 20-year healing process to kind of get back to normalization. And then last August of 2013, I was contacted by Superior Officer Colonel Jack Jameson, who put me on the horn with a Superior Brigadier General, Julian Smythe, who said to me, would you like to go public? To which I was shocked to hear that we were at that point, or they were suggesting that. I didn't think that we were going to get there for a while, like some years down the road before we were going to get to that point. But the Brigadier General said to me, things have changed. We have to move time frame because things have changed. Whatever we sort of thought everyone was waiting 2 or 3 years for is now happening last week. So, you know, everybody's time frames are moving up and we have to change what we're doing. So, yeah. We're not ordering you. This is not an order. This is a request. If you would like to be the person that, you know, is our out front person, would you like to go public and be the official spokesperson for United States Marine Corps Special Section? And I... After some conversation back and forth, I did not readily agree. I was a little unhappy at first, and so we had to have a conversation where I felt that my concerns were addressed and that I understood what was going on. And I got a security clearance upgrade with that, and I've been getting weekly briefings from Brigadier General ever since. We're in constant communication, and I've been trying to speak publicly and get people aware of what's been happening, and not just to tell the story, but to make people aware of the relevant issues around the story, which is that we have these technological innovations which could make life better, world better, the marketplace better, society better, civilization better, you know, eliminate inequality and poverty and these sorts of things that are crushing our planet. And so being issue-oriented and trying to talk about how these technological programs can be extracted, applied to civilian life and so forth is the goal and purpose of Earth Citizen Consulting, is to consult on these transitionary technologies and transitionary processes on how we get from this sort of crappy, unclean, not working place where we are with all of these technologies that are just right waiting for us to implement and put into the marketplace, and they're being resisted by corporate profiteers, that if we can change some of that, really, you know, grease the wheels in the right way, that those things start to move into the marketplace, we could change the world for the better by actually solving the problems instead of just sitting around complaining, talking about how in another 20 years and another $20 billion, maybe we'll be able to think about solving the problem, when we really just have to get access to the information and the technology that we have right now and have had for the last 70 years to fix those problems. So that's the quickest nutshell I can sort of say that's who I am and why I'm here and what I'm doing.
Great. You know, there's a lot of information that's come out lately, and I know Foster Gamble brought some of it out. And I've been working kind of behind the scenes, connecting people that do have a lot of these technologies with the families or the huge trusts involved that are just saying enough is enough to the cabal, you know, and they're actually kind of backed them into a corner and just said, you're done. And so we're right in the middle of that process right now. But I know that you were talking earlier, there's the first thing I wanted to cover is the all over the YouTube, they had a tremendous explosion supposedly on Mars, and there's all these messages coming out. And I'd really like to get to the nitty-gritty of this, because, you know, there's everything from the cabal base on Mars was totally destroyed to It was a reptilian war, and I don't know. It just, there's a million different stories about that, but the one thing they're saying is that there is no base on Mars anymore, that everything's been totally destroyed. So I'd love to get your comment on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've certainly been hearing all those rumors myself, and right after it happened, I started being inundated with emails, people asking me, have you seen this? You know, and I've heard this, and people are saying the base was destroyed, et cetera, et cetera. So there are really only a few things that we know and a few things that we don't know, and I will try and be as clear and specific about them as possible. The first thing that we know is that the discharge in question, and I try not to refer to it as an explosion, mm-hmm. because we don't know that it was an explosion, but it was clearly a large energy discharge. And I'm just splitting hairs with, you know, physics definitions when I'm not saying explosion, and I'd rather say discharge because we don't know what it was. So we know that it was a massive energy discharge. We know that. We also know that it was in space. It did not occur on the surface of the planet in orbit. And so to our knowledge and all best information we have, nothing on the surface was harmed, nothing on the surface was attacked, nothing on the surface was destroyed, did not disturb the atmosphere of the surface in any way, shape, or form. It was an outer space discharge that occurred somewhere in space on the line, the sort of ABC line. If we're A and Mars is C, then somewhere that B point on that line is where that discharge took place. Exactly where, we don't know. Based on the image that we have, we don't know, because you can't calculate the algebra triangulation equation that you need with only one variable. You need two variables to solve for X and that one. So we could come up with some ratios to sort of look at, but there's really no way to even say how big it was and where exactly it was without access to much more specific and special instrumentation. But I will also say that even that instrumentation has not done much more than show an area of where the discharge took place. So it's not even a specific, you know, location that we can pinpoint and say it happened right here. We can more say there is a zone of space in which this discharge took place. So we still can't exactly calculate the equation of where it was or how big it was. But there are some readings that definitely indicate that this was, you know, a discharge that was several million joules, okay? That's a large discharge. So beyond several million joules, you know, that spikes, you know, the needle way over into the red, you know, we can't be too exact to say the level of this discharge and the amount of energy, except that it was millions of joules, and that's a lot. So it was a massive discharge in space, not on the surface. That's what we know for sure. We're not really sure what it came from, not really sure who did it, not really sure whether it was an act of aggression from one person to another, whether someone had an onboard failure that destroyed their vehicle, that, you know, massive discharge that destroyed a ship. But our suspicion at this moment, based on the readings, sort of psionic readings of the space, is that there was no loss of life. There was no destructive force that killed anyone. So there's no resonance in the psionic field that it was an act of aggression that harmed or killed or destroyed a life form. So what we seem to have is a massive energy discharge, millions of joules in amplitude, in which no one was harmed, no one was physically harmed. If there was any material that was harmed or machinery that was harmed, there were no personnel within the range of it, so we have no evidence that a single person or living thing, human or extraterrestrial, was harmed in that discharge. So that leaves us with a little bit of a quandary of who, what, where, you know, who, what, where, and why did this thing occur. And the best guess that we have right now, and we're still looking into this because we won't know until we can figure out the culprit who did it and why, but our guess is somebody knew that because this was going to occur in that B point on this ABC line, at that precise time that we'd be looking. And someone wanted us to see it because they knew that we'd be looking. Now, why? We can only speculate. Our main speculation at this point is, I'm not the only person who's trying to break the bubble of secrecy. There are many, many, many other people in agencies and departments who are trying to nudge and burst the bubble of secrecy. It is our suspicion that somebody, very likely within the space program, very likely not necessarily with the entire approval of the cadre, possibly a few officers who decided we're going to do this and decided to set off a massive energy discharge, possibly a quantum weapon or something, in that space on that ABC line at that B point, at the point that we'd know that we'd be looking when the comet was passing around the planet in order to say, hey, look here, guess what, stuff's happening. And it certainly worked in the sense that it made people talk about it, it's made people discuss it, it's made people have a conversation about it, in a way that just having a casual conversation about things doesn't get the attention of, oh my God, there was an explosion, and that gets everybody's, you know, hackles up and they start talking about it. So if in fact, as our suspicion leans, it was somebody attempting to get the attention of everyone by setting off a large flash at the precise moment that they knew we'd be looking at that part of space, then it worked. It got everybody's attention and it got people talking about it. So, but we don't know for sure. What we do know, it was in space, it was millions of joules. What we don't know exactly who did it, but it was definitely in space, and there was nothing that was harmed or destroyed on the surface of the planet. And in fact, there's no other intelligence that there's any like aggressive activity that I would need to report on right now happening on Mars, or any crazy explosions, wars, or revolutions happening there. But who knows? If anything does happen and I hear about it, I mean, I'll let you know. But right. At this point, I'm still getting that it's fairly quiet there. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's super quiet. It just means it's fairly quiet. I don't think that this is a sign that anything major is happening on the surface, or there's some kind of major offensive or anything like that. I don't think there's any indication of that. I think it's just somebody was setting off a firework when they know we would be looking to get our attention. That's our guess.
Yeah.
We don't know much more than that.
Great. Now, the other thing that these other messages were, I'd love to get your comment on that, are saying that, you know, the base on Mars is a cabal base and it's the place that they're planning on, you know, heading out to and bailing and letting the Earth just pretty much fold in on itself. You know, it was their basically escape route. I'd love to hear your comments on that.
Well, and it certainly functions as that at the moment. It's not its only function. I always have to bring up this point when talking about cabals and organizations, that there's no such thing as a cohesive, everyone's a part of the conspiracy and the cabal and the black hats or any such thing. It's about factions, it's about groups, it's about how they loosely agree to an agenda together while maybe somebody leads, and then how they disagree or shift loyalties. It really is about the sort of micromanaging of groups and organizations and people who are not all together, don't have the same agenda and don't always have the same goal. So there is definitely the element of those who are trying to use Mars as an escape point, trying to use it as a get far away from point, so that as everything unfolds here, they won't be directly involved for a number of reasons, whether it's either destructive and or evolutionary. The other theory that I think is very interesting is that when the serious wind of the sort of dimensional vibrational ascension may be a true thing, and when the cabal sort of got intelligence that might be a real thing, they were terrified to the point of, well, how far can we get away and not be affected by it? Because the last thing that they want is to be forced to evolve in a vibrational way that they don't want to evolve. They are perfectly, perfectly happy continuing with the unequal sort of, you know, feudalistic system that they're playing with. They have no desire to go to a higher frequency dimensional equality system. So they would rather, you know, if they can't stop it from happening, which they've certainly done a lot to try and stop it from happening, from, you know, trying to, you know, blow up node points in the grid with underground nuclear tests and, you know, HARP and some other crazy stuff. But if they can't destroy it or stop it from happening, you know, getting away from it is their next best thing. So they certainly, either if, you know, if the planet's going to be destroyed or if it's going to, you know, change and evolve, they don't want to be on it. They don't want to be caught in the middle of that. They'd rather try and control it or be away from it and not be controlled by those effects. So what I think is more interesting is that, yeah, that's their escape point, but there's all these other people involved in these programs and involved in the process who are starting to see that the leadership by that cabal has not done everybody a good, done well. You know, it's really done the larger group harm. And, you know, one of the main reasons you allow someone or give someone the sort of permission to sort of run things is you ultimately assume that they're going to do a better job than someone else. Even if they're crazy fascists who want to do it by war and killing people, you sort of presume, well, at least they're strong, at least they're going to get the job done, I'm at least going to give my faith to that person because I think they're going to do a better job than if this other person does. But after so many years of them doing a terrible, horrible job, you know, you start to go, dang it, this is not working. These guys suck at this. And you really start to think about how you want to replace the leadership with someone who's going to actually make it work for everybody. So, essentially, my greatest hope is that the cabal is still in a minority. Even amongst the other programs and even amongst the Mars colonists, they're a minority. They're not the majority of all of those people. And so it's still very possible for democracy in that sense to happen for these other members of these groups who sort of cohesively agree to change their mind and to vote differently with, you know, their ability to change loyalties with groups and agendas and leaders in order to say, no, we tried it your way and you guys got a big fail, so now we're going to let somebody else do it. So I think that they're losing their support, you know, that their fascist control that they've been able to maintain partly through, you know, brute force and partly through the compliance of those who they need to be compliant to make it all actually run, to work, who, like I said, you guys look like you'll do a good job. But now they haven't. So the people who have been relied to run the world for them realize, God, you guys have really been running this into the ground. And so I don't think that the cabal has won friends. You know, I think they've continued to lose friends by being very, very clear about what their agenda is, which is not to make the world a better place, not to make civilization better, but to really take us to a worse, dark place of some kind of high-tech techno-feudalism, which isn't evolved at all, which is really just kind of dumb and backwards, and why would we want to have all this massive advanced technology but have our stunted social, emotional, psychological civilization headspace back in the Dark Ages? Why would we want that? So I think as people realize that as we move into the future, some are trying to drag us back into the Dark Ages, and that's not a good thing, and that we have to switch the loyalties to the people who are actually trying to take us into the future and not drag us back and make it the Hunger Games, you know? I mean, there are plenty of people who see that they're trying to make it into the Hunger Games, and we don't want the Hunger Games on planet Earth. So I think a lot of people have really started to see that that's not just, you know, a feint or a joke. They're actually trying to do that. So people who don't want to be in the Hunger Games are standing up against that. I think that's the best part I can. The most open thing I can say about that is, yeah, you know, they've got all these things, but they're losing all their support. They need other people to get away with it, and they're losing a lot of support of the people they need to get away with it because the people see that it's not in their interest. They're dead. They're done for if they help these guys. So they're switching sides and going, nah, screw you. That's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely needs to happen. Yeah, I always tell people it's not that, you know, cut and dried, because people have these stereotypes of this and this and this, and, you know, they think like all the royal family are lizards and all the, and that's not really the case. You know, some very well may be, but there's other ones that are working on on the good side, you know, and just as the same in government, you know, there are people in government that are white hats that are doing all they can to, you know, to work for the better and put a stop to some of this nonsense that's going on with these dark hearts. But and I just see energetically, it's like the force, whatever you want to call it.
That's what I call it.
The source, God, you know, prime creator, whatever name you want to give it, is definitely behind the white hats and the positive timeline, and it's definitely coming forward very quickly. I'm surprised at how fast things are unfolding. And you said one of your advisors told you that it's on and it's happening now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. And I, like I said, I have weekly briefings, and and I'm constantly being, you know, like, okay, like, you know, now's not the time to be like waiting. It's happening, you know. And trying to just be reminded, because like everybody else, I'm living in the regular sort of world, you know, where what's happening in the newspaper and the television, because, you know, I'm still around regular people and the regular exposure of that, and also being exposed to all these other things. So sometimes it's just a reminder of, no, remember, this is actually happening, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, right, this is all actually happening. And it's not, you know, that I really forget so much as that we all still sometimes have to live in two worlds, and so sometimes, you know, your brain just gets into be like, oh, wait, I was really involved in the other world for a minute because I still have to go to the grocery store and get gas in my car and stuff, and then being reminded, no, this is really all the interesting things are happening right now. Here's what happened yesterday. Here's what happened this week. And, you know, just the constant reminder to be very alert and very aware, because there's going to be opportunities out of all of this chaos, as Seuss likes to say, out of chaos comes opportunity. And so I'm constantly reminded to be aware and really wide awake to those opportunities, because they're going to be huge, you know, sort of plot hole developments that if you really are aware and you go, ah, there's an opportunity, and you really jump on it at that instant moment, there's really the real amazing opportunity to push the momentum of the rolling ball down the hill in another direction, because I always like to say it's about the laws of physics, you know, no matter how you want to look at it. And you could say that the whole system of civilization is a ball rolling down a hill with momentum going in a certain direction. And as the Native American proverb says, if we keep heading where we're going, we're going to end exactly where we're headed, or something like that. You know,
yeah, we're going to end up exactly where we're at. I always say, you know, be the ball. You know, if the ball's rolling downhill, be the ball. You know, don't stand in front of it and try to stop it or resist it.
Yeah,
you know, you better learn to be the ball.
Right, it's something that has momentum, and if you want it to change, like, the direction that it's going to head, it takes adjusting that momentum. But you don't have to use the same force as the ball to change momentum. You just need to hit it at the right moment, push it at the right moment. You know, you know, as it's bumping over that rock and it's coming off of the ground for a second, it's got this free space of physics. And then if you bump it hard to the left, you know, it'll really start to tilt. So I use those sort of metaphors of the laws of physics because I think that really applies to energetic non-physical dynamics. This is a thing with momentum and it's going in a direction very, very strongly. But we have these opportunities to nudge it at the correct opportunities, and by the time it gets down to the bottom of the hill, if we do it right, it's going to be a quarter mile off to the left or the right and not run through the middle of the town, which is kind of, you know, what you want to get, broadly speaking. So I think there are these amazing opportunities to be awake and aware for these opportunities to exploit the changing momentum of the ball, and we can really, we can really shift it in a way that just wasn't possible 10 years ago. Just wasn't possible.
Well, I'm just blown away at what I've been watching, and I've been involved with some people that are actually very involved in even the paperwork. And I had the opportunity to talk to some of these people, but there's these massive trusts and gold reserves and these families, you know, the Shigano Trust and the White Dragon and all these people, that they do exist. They are real.
Right.
And they have quintillion dollars. It's something we can't even imagine. You know, they're so much more wealthy than the cabal and that program. And they actually have noble virtue. A lot of them they see where things are going. They want to shift this planet. They want to turn things around. And they actually are much more powerful than these cabal factions and these other ones. And now that they're starting to move, and the assets that they have on every level are just beyond imagination, and that's what gives me hope when I see this happening and the potential behind this, and what's happening with, you know, the banksters. Basically, they tried to file bankruptcy in world court, and the other one stepped in and said, no, right, we're not going to allow you to file bankruptcy. You're going to be responsible for the debt you created and the mess, you know, you created. So now they say, you know, they said either pay up your debts or, you know, suffer the consequences, you know, the legal consequences. So
So anyway, so they've basically got nowhere to go. It's going to be interesting, and their only way out is to just, you know, drop their program, you know, and move on, you know, let go of their any kind of ruling potentials that they thought they had or have been expressing and move on. So, but you know, and I was asking some questions about that. I said, well, if you know, if the Federal Reserve is now defunct and no longer operational, that would mean the IRS would follow and some of these other agencies would be right behind it. You know, and the United States of America Corporation is defunct because they couldn't pay up on their debts. And this other group is stepping in to cover those debts and take care of it. You know, you look at the big picture, you go, wow, this is just a mind blower, you know, on how this is all unfolding and how fast it's unfolding. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the John Q. public aren't even going to know what happened or what went down until they go to their ATM machine and see that Federal Reserve notes are no longer there, that they're getting Treasury notes. That's probably the only way people are going to start kind of figuring things out.
Well, but to be honest, I'm not even sure that the change is going to be that obvious. You know, the change that would need to be made on paper money, you know, to say that it's a Treasury note instead of a Federal Reserve note is a little bit of ink. Yeah. And, you know, people might, if they're not reading the ink, if people weren't reading the ink on their dollar bills, they didn't notice when they went from being Treasury notes to Federal Reserve notes. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't notice when they changed back necessarily. So unless they drastically try and change the paper script, it could still be such a subtle change that if people really aren't paying attention, that they won't really notice.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm sure that probably is what's going to transpire. You know, for most people, you know, but I see this other thing through all the alternative media. This is all coming out. And you know, a good friend of mine, Foster Gamble, came out, and he actually brought this out and started talking about a lot of the same information. And I'm not sure where he got his information, you know, from, but he's coming out with the same information. I'll probably give him a ring and say, hey, who you been talking to? But just to get inside to see if we are working with the same people. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I feel really, like you were talking about earlier, I was going, okay, yeah, well, when's this going to happen? Is that like 20 years from now or whatever? And we're getting the same information. No, it's happening now, and it's huge. Yeah. And the old program is going out the door, and there's a whole new program that's a lot more user-friendly coming in to take its place.
That certainly looks to be the case. Yeah, I see all the evidence of that in every direction of that. So I'll apologize if I say her name wrong. Karen Hudis?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the fact that she came out a while back about her involvement in the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and from what I hear, she's been reinstated. I mean, they're allowing her back in meetings and things. There's some security guys who work for somebody else who've been trying to deny her access to the building and so forth. But she's actually been let back into meetings again, and she's participating again. So she's gone from whistleblower status to back on working in the system, working on the problem and the transitionary stuff, from what I hear. So that's just huge for someone that you think, oh, are they on their way to a car accident? Oh, no, they've been reinstated. Wow, okay. That's gigantic, really, because she's already come out and said that, you know, there's an ET conspiracy takeover of the global banking system. That's not the kind of thing that, you know, 10 years ago you'd be drummed out for that and never let back in. But the fact that it's like, nah, we'd like you to come back. I mean, that's gigantic. That's just huge.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, a lot in the old days, you know, you'd go, well, I wonder, you know, I can't believe that person said that. You know, they're not going to last long, and then they're gone, you know. And that's the way it usually happens. Now I'm seeing they've got staying power, and they're still in there. They're just blowing the whistle on all this stuff and just telling it like it is. And it's, you know, it's amazing, and that's a good sign, you know. That, and also see too is that I know what I've been doing, and I'm not going to give details or anything else, but I've been connecting different nations and different groups and people that do have the technologies with all together with these other groups, you know, these that are holding these funds, and I've been behind the scenes. You know, I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of guy. I don't like to be out front with a lot
Me
of this
too.
Stuff.
I'm more of a behind the scenes guy too. This was not how I would have chose to do this. This is the opposite of what I've been doing my entire life, is being the out in front guy. So it's a real switch for me. It's a real switch.
Yeah, and somehow I just ended up in the middle of all this, and I go, oh, you need to meet this person, you need to meet this person, and it kept escalating, and I saw people that were doing some really good work and had some amazing technologies that they're ready to bring out, both healing and fuelless energy technologies. So, and now I'm just seeing the resistance is pretty much folded in on itself. You know, as we were talking earlier, the Rockefellers divesting out of oil is a biggie. You know, that's a big one right there. So we know the oil industries, which is one of the biggest problems on the planet, is going to be shifting over into different types of energy technologies.
Yeah, someone sent me an email really recently, last week, a Canadian company that's beginning manufacture first of the year. They're taking orders. They're beginning manufacturing first of the year something on a water-powered generator, like a little portable generator that's supposed to be water-powered. Uh-huh. I have one of my people who is... I was telling him about it. I sent him the link, and he was like, oh, hey, I'm like 15 miles from there. I'll go check that out. And I was like, okay, great. Go find out what's going on. Let me know if this is on the up and up and these guys are for real. Because if someone's really finally, you know, producing a proper hydrogen-cracking water-powered generator, which is... We've had that technology since Stan Meyer built his water-powered car.
Yeah.
And Daniel Dingle, who's a Filipino appliance repairman, basically. Like, he has a kiosk that repairs appliances. And some number of years ago, he developed a box that's basically a saltwater hydrogen cracker that separates the hydrogen right out immediately and pumps it right into a combustion engine without having to store dangerous amounts of hydrogen or use fuel cell technology. It's the most basic thing in the world. We've had it for a long time. So if someone's really got it, they're really marketing it, they're really letting them get out with it, and the Canadians are on that, I think that's great. That's a huge shifter. Again, seeing if we're really turning away from fossil fuels, that's the kind of thing that we're just going to need, and they're just going to start allowing those technologies into the marketplace because we need them now. So if that's on the up and up and that's for real, I will continue to post more about that and let people know if I find out more, if it's the real deal. And if it is, I'll put something on my site and tell everyone to buy one right now. Because that's exactly the kind of thing we've been waiting for.
Exactly. There's some other technologies I'm aware of, and I can't talk too much about it. I kind of keep a tight lip on it. But there is technology right now that can desalinate water. And it takes sewer water and actually burn the pollution off in a plasma generator, and at the same time put out super oxygenated water that's actually healthy. It's a healing water, and then create a huge, enormous amount of electricity, and it's self-contained. It doesn't need fuel. You know,
right.
It's amazing. So you've got a device that will provide fresh healing water and provide all your energy needs at the same time. And you know, this is, if you have a catastrophe or something happens, you can just drop one of these things in, and all of a sudden everybody's got fresh water. They've got antibiotic water, you might say, or healing water. And at the same time, all their energy needs could be provided. And I think that's going to be a major asset. And, you know, that same technology, you could actually, you know, hook up to your vehicle and run it, you know, just as well.
Right. Four teenage schoolgirls in Africa built a portable generator that runs on urine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it just runs on urine. I mean, yours, your cows, your goats. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about a generator that will run forever on something, you will always have a supply of.
Yeah.
A generator that runs on urine is, I mean... Again, you know, teenage schoolgirls in Africa figured it out, and they're just like, "We need a solution. Ah, let's make an engine that runs on pee," and it totally worked.
that's gonna piss off the oil companies.
that was mainstream media that covered that. That wasn't even like fringe media talking about the generator. I mean, that was just like that was right on the regular news feed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so,
I mean,
so,
there's...
You know, places in the third world, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you need a generator and fuel that you didn't have to go get gas for. There you go.
Yeah. I know Africa, there's a lot of things coming out of Africa right now that I'm in touch with some of the people there. And they had one device that boils water, this little ball. Mm-hmm. And the guy took it to the grave with him, the technology, but it was just a small little ball. You could drop in a cup of tea, and it would boil the tea almost immediately.
Interesting.
But you could also drop it into a swimming pool, and the way it works, it would actually heat, you know, boil the water in a swimming pool. These things are so intense. And I thought about it, if you have something like that, that would take care of everything as well. And so everybody thought he took this to the grave with him, but there are people that have recreated it, and that's going to be coming out, as well as a magnetic generator in Africa as well that's going to be amazing. So it's like these technologies are going to be coming from every direction. I think in the next 6 months, we're going to see all kinds of things, you know, and technologies popping out that just can't be suppressed. You know, there's just too much going on. I apologize for all the noise.
While we're on that subject, really quick, before I forget or we run out of time, these two rocket accidents which we had, in which the dangerous, unsafe, antique use of liquid fuel rockets took somebody's life. And I want to say that we don't need to do that anymore, and I just want to straight up say to Elon Musk and to Branson, you guys need to contact me and we can do magnetogravitics, okay? The first person who wants to say, let's do magnetogravitics and gives me a call, we can make that crap happen. I don't have the money to do that, but someone who really wants to be able to build a vehicle with magnetogravitics in it and get away from this antique, dangerous liquid fuel rocket crap needs to contact me right now. We can do this, okay? There, I said it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I agree. I know another person that has the technology. He's already got it. And we sat there, you know, we sat there in the office of, what's that guy's name? I can't think of his name. He's one of the guys in Vegas, you know. He's got a huge, he's putting up Genesis and all these weird stuff up in space. I don't know why I'm brain farting. I can't think of his name now.
That's okay. I am too, so.
Yeah, but, I mean, I actually brought a scientist there that had anti-gravitic technology and everything else, and he's going, why are you using rockets? You know, why are you sending Russian rockets up there, putting all this stuff in space? You know, you could, if you're going to try to build this space hotel, you know, you could have all this other technology and do it right, you know, without endangering everybody's lives and everything. And we were just like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. We'll have a nice day. And then ushered out the door, you know, basically. So
yeah, it is. My suspicion is that they've been told that, you know, it's a technology that they're not allowed to pursue at this point. But
yeah.
I don't think that that's as – I think that's more of a threat than it is we're actually going to, like, you know, tell you that, you know, do something if you develop that technology. I think they're just still trying to keep – that technology in the military programs and not in the civilian programs. But no, that's basically saying in an age when we have really, 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 really fast cars that go down the road, we're going to send a couple of people in a push cart that's got a rubber band motor in it because, you know, we're going to pretend like that's the limitation of the technology, and it's just stupid and dangerous. It's just stupid and dangerous, and it's hobbling our ability to move forward into a space-based industry program. Like, we need to move into space-based industry, not crawl down the road with rocket technology, for goodness sake.
Yeah. There's a lot of external noise here, unfortunately, but this is Mexico, and we're doing the best we can. I'm surprised we've gotten away with it this long, but it's funny, all the loud music and the weed, now the mowers and the weed eaters and everything is just going off. It's like
that time of day.
Yeah, it's like for somehow it's all gravitated around the very place I'm doing the radio show, which is kind of interesting. Like Murphy's Law, you know. But you know, I think this guy's stuck on one weed with his weed eater, making sure that thing dies or something. I don't know what he's doing, but or he's being automatically controlled by some other force. Who knows?
Right.
But anyway, to make a long story short. But yeah, it sounds like everything is unfolding, and you know, it is starting to happen very fast. And I'm getting it from, as you are, from very reliable sources that this old age of tyranny is folding in on itself, and there's a, you know, I hate to use the cliche, but a whole new world is starting to unfold, and these healing technologies and the fuelless energy technologies are coming forward. And one other thing I wanted to ask you, I saw again today, somebody sent me this Facebook, and it was this kid, you know, shaved head, undergoing chemotherapy, radiation treatment, everything else, and his mother, you see her face, and she's looking in to the camera, and she's just bawling, and her eyes are red, and she's so upset. You know, and I see these things all the time, and I see these cancer patients, and you were talking about the soldiers that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq that are missing limbs and things, and you're talking about we do have that technology to regenerate those limbs and make them whole again. I'd love for you to talk about that. Do you see this actually being released or coming out in the future?
Two things. First of all, through some very real, legitimate medical studies, we know that THC and CBDs and cannabinoids and cannabis cure cancer. There's no question about that. Cannabis cures cancer. Nixon did the study back in the 70s to try and link smoking cannabis to cancer, which is smoking cigarettes. The study came out the opposite, so he knew back then, buried it. We now have some really, 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 really good modern medical studies that show, without any question of a doubt, cannabis kills cancer. So I want that message to be out there for cancer people. If you don't understand that concentrated cannabis oil will get rid of, to cure cancer, you need to know that right now. Epilepsy is the other thing that we know it is an absolute cure for. So I just want to say that right away. Now, this medical technology that I've talked about, this holographic repatterning technology, I actually have been talking to a doctor who's really interested in this technology and really interested in trying to understand it so we can see what the ability to duplicate that technology in the civilian world is. And I'm there's more technical aspects of it that I'm having to sort of get some information on before we can do much more other than talk about it right now. But we're certainly discussing it and talking about the nuts and bolts of what kind of technology we have now in the civilian world that can look in this direction, and what can be combined, and what we're going to need to sort of interject into that equation to make it work. So without just getting the technology from a covert program, I can tell you that we're already thinking and trying to solve the question of how do we do it, even if we don't get the technology from the covert programs. But I still believe that the best, fastest way, really, is to just, you know, use a crowbar, you know, sort of a legal crowbar, and extract these technologies from these programs and then interject them into the marketplace sooner than later. But if we can't do that, or, you know, that takes too long, we're certainly talking and discussing how to move forward on that and how to make that technology happen independent of that. So I will say this. It's a fairly simple, straightforward technology, but the hitches seem to be having the ability to translate the sequence into a holographic projection. Like, that's something that this technology does that we need to be able to figure out exactly how to do. And right now, the technology that we have to sort of read sequences and create models on that, we don't have someone who's developed that hardware, that software, really. But there's stuff that's moving in that direction. So we could certainly say, if we don't extract this technology from the covert programs, we'll get there. You know, we're talking about it, working on it. Well, now that we know that it, you know, exists, other people know that it exists, and I've talked about it, they're seriously interested in how to solve that equation and work that problem. So we're working on it, and I know other people who are serious about wanting to work on it. And it's really about making the leap of having a computer and that has the ability to take that sequence sample and read the entire sequence. And we can do that. We can read the sequences. But you need a computer that then can read that sequence, translate it into a three-dimensional holographic model, and then certainly the hologram technology that we're developing, even in the civilian world, is getting pretty amazing. So it's just a matter of, in the same way that, you know, better graphics was just something that was going to happen over time. You know, the better resolution on these holograms that we know of is just going to happen over time. So our ability to project them on a tiny, tiny, tiny molecular level is going to come eventually, you know, with resolution. So yeah, even if we don't, again, get that technology, we're starting to see where we have the nuts and bolts that we can figure out how to develop those in the right direction, then down the road how they'll come together and we can make that a civilian technology. Because I certainly want to emphasize that studies have been done to show that healthcare costs are not just skyrocketing, but that there's a point, there's a critical point where when healthcare costs reach about 20% of GDP, it will absolutely break the spinal column of society. Like, we will be crushed by healthcare costs as soon as healthcare costs reach 20% of GDP. And they're not in any sign at all of going down. I mean, we've managed to the Affordable Care Act has, you know, taken a nip in the bud at some of burgeoning healthcare costs, but the only way to really attack that is to completely change the system of technological growth in such a way that you're not spending exorbitant, crazy amounts of money on technology that's really crappy. You know, you're spending too much money on technology that you're not getting the benefit of, when you could spend money on another technology that you would get such a benefit from that you could reduce the effective cost for every single illness, every single disability, every single injury, cancer case, everything, and, you know, increase worker productivity, eliminate, you know, the burden of people who, I mean, essentially, if you can restore everybody's crippled limbs and everybody's blind eyes and everybody's deaf ears, you know, the burden, the financial burden, which I don't think is I just say financial burden because it is a cost, but it's a thing that we should take care of, our handicapped people. But if we have the technology that can make all the handicapped people not handicapped anymore, that would save more money. So all of these things that we can do with this technology ultimately are a huge financial and social savings that will put more resources, more economic money back into the society and back into people's pockets, and no longer feeding a beast that's just going to end up destroying us anyway. And that's not really helping us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We've got, you know, the oil industry. We've got big pharma and the war industry, you know, running the show right here. And, you know, what if you took all those assets and shifted them, you know, into a positive direction, you know? And you know, I'm all for defense. You know, we do need a Department of Defense. But right now we have, you know, the Brute Squad, which is the corporate sponsored, you know, programs going out there for resources, you know, and we're the Department of Offense, and that needs to change. But the you know, that you can just take that funding and that energy and just redirect it. It would, you could take care of all the ills. You know, I think they said they're just building some new fighter jet that they're spending something trillion dollars on. A new fighter jet, and I just went, my God. And then they broke it down on what could be done with that money with one jet, and it was just unbelievably, it was psychotic when you looked at the direction things were going.
I think it's for the new F-35, the new Raptor, yeah, which is a total piece of crap. It is not even a good jet as far as, If you look at the history of aircraft and the development of jet aircraft, mm-hmm, you can kind of say, you know, which ones got better and which ones sort of, you know, didn't get better as you sort of moved along, and sort of the leap from the F-25 to the F-35 is not what it should be. It's not like you're getting your bang for your buck that way. You'd really be better off, I hate to say it, but I mean, we'd really be better off just, you know, reinvesting in, you know, F-18s and Phantoms, things that work. You know, I mean, the notion that we need, you know, these sort of, to use what really is not even the most advanced technology we have to, like, make a new model of a jet. That's basically all you're doing is you're rolling out this year's model because you don't want to drive around, you know, your 20-year-old jet or something, we don't want to be the old Soviets. We don't want to fly MiGs around for 30 years, you know. We have to have new planes. Mm-hmm. But it's not worth it. It's not worth it at all. And certainly when you think about, you know, where we're spending that money and where it could go elsewhere, stupid. I mean, I am. I am all for spending on defense. I don't ever want to be feel like we're really vulnerable to being harmed or overtaken by not having a defense program. But when it's just the program of jackbooted kick you in the balls, it's not defense at that point. And so we do need to curb, you know, those budgets into different directions. And I'm one of those people that I don't want to say, let's just eliminate the defense budget. I don't think so, because and here's the argument why, you know, conservatives certainly don't want to do this. Well, it's dependent on all these jobs and all these factories and the workers who are still building this stuff. Okay, I concur. But let's, you know, shift it a little bit, which is, instead of spending all of that money on jets and planes and missiles, we need to be spending that money on, you know, low orbiting spacecraft and, you know, platforms and you know, we need to be spending that on the space-based industry. We need to we don't need to cut, you know, like, and eliminate all the jobs and all the factories and all the industry and all what we're spending on defense in order for it to not be wasteful. We really just need to spend it on something that matters, like space-based industry. The second that we shift that and we spend it on space-based industry, we'll have more jobs, more money in the economy, and instead of having to justify, well, I got all these hammers, I better look for some nails to smack, you know, we have resources that can say, I have all this space exploration equipment, maybe I better explore space.
Yeah.
So it's really about, we'll use what we have, and if we keep building hammers, we're going to go around smacking nails, but if we build vehicles that can go places, we're going to go places.
Yeah. Did you hear, I don't know if you saw in the news lately, but I guess we had one of our best destroyers over in the Baltic Sea with super high-tech, everything you can imagine, you know, rockets, everything on it. It's just the best of the best, the high tech. We can shoot down anything launched, you know, supposed and everything. And they did fly, you know, it's probably a pretty advanced MiG, flew over the thing and just shut the whole thing down. Yeah. And so, you know, here they just spent God knows how much on this destroyer, and one plane flew over and just shut down all its systems. And you just think how moronic that is, you know, how ridiculous that is, and what you know, that all that could have been, you know, used for, you know, that probably trillions of dollars on those things, who knows. But you know, we're actually hitting the end of the hour, unfortunately, but before we go, it'd be great if you have any parting messages, and if you have any contact information that you want to give the folks.
Oh, people can always go to my website, which is www.earthcitizenconsulting.org, Earth Citizen Consulting, all is one word. There's contact information there. People can send me emails if they have questions, comments, things that they need, consulting services, anything they need help sorted out with. I will just say this to people who have sent me emails and are sending me emails. I'm so inundated at the moment, I can't get to everybody and everything. So if I haven't gotten back to your email, you know, or I don't get back to you right away, it's because I've got more in my inbox than I can deal with on a daily basis. But I get to everybody eventually. I get to everything eventually. So don't feel like you're going to, you know, your message is going to be wasted. Just understand that I'm one man, and that right now I have a lot of correspondence to deal with.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to answer questions. I'm happy to sort things out with people. I'm happy to help consult and give advice wherever and however I can. And a lot of people send me emails just offering information, offering their own particular stories and angles on things, which I'm always appreciative of, and sending forwarding stories to keep me posted on what's going on. I always appreciate that. I just want to make clear to everybody, don't feel bad if you don't get back to me right away. I'm so busy and only got two hands and so many waking hours that I just can't get to it all. So people can always contact me there, and I really appreciate you know, the time people take to say things and be supportive. Beyond that, I just want to emphasize that, you know, this is about problem solving, and we can solve the problems as soon as we decide to be solution oriented and stop being problem oriented. Because problem-oriented is a lot of complaining. Solution-oriented is, what do we do to fix it? How do we get there? What tools do we need? How long is it going to get there for us to get there? How much gas do we need to get there? I mean, you know, it's really asking the nuts and bolts questions of how do we do it.
Great.
So I just want to emphasize that I'm a nuts and bolts guy. I'm happy to talk about my story. I'm happy to talk theory. I'm happy to talk esoterics. But what I really want to talk about is nuts and bolts on how we fix things and how we get from A to Z.
Right. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I'm sure we'll probably have some more updates coming soon, and we'll have you back on.
Thank you so much, James. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and your audience. Thank you very, very much for having me.
Well, keep up the good work, and this is James Gilliland signing off. Have a great evening. Watch the skies and, you know, be the ball. You know, don't just sit and watch the ball rolling down the hill. You know, help it roll and give it a push now and then. Anyway, have a good evening. All right, we got it.
Great.
Awesome.
Fabulous, James. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me again. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, I've been working with this guy, amazing guy, and there's two of them. I don't even want to mention their names over the air, but they're writing the paperwork and, you know, putting the hammer down on all these guys. it's going on the highest level.
I mean, there are things that I just won't give details about at the moment either, but oh my goodness, I'm hearing some people who are planning and doing some really amazing things and talking again, yeah, about the nuts and bolts and the paperwork and filing the documents and really, we should see just more incredible, amazing things happen. And I'm just so excited,
Yeah, it's great. Well, anyway, hey, thanks for coming on the show. I got to run. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, James. You take care.
All right. Bye.